Justin Bonomo, my friend, so good to see you. Welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Thank you, my friend. I'm doing great. I appreciate you having me.
Congratulations on being a new father to a wonderful, beautiful baby girl. And congratulations to you and your wife on that, man. That's so exciting.
Thank you so much. It was 2 weeks Wednesday, and it's flown by, but we're absolutely loving it.
You were mentioning to me before we started recording that the baby has been an intentional stop or a braking mechanism for you in your fast-paced life. And I think I would love to start opening up that conversation on such an amazing, lighthearted note. We're going to get more into the money stuff, everybody. But I think this was just such a beautiful topic. You were just talking about how the baby that you guys just had came in and like has taught you so much about intentionality and patience. And what has it been like for you so far just being a new dad?
I love that. And it's been awesome. But one thing I think that like I noticed or learned immediately was from this experience, I learned on such a deeper level what God's grace and love for us means. You know, to have been through some of the things I've been through in the past, been some versions of me that definitely weren't what God was calling me to do, and have lacked love and grace in some past areas of my life, to be handed so much love and grace in this baby was so eye-opening and really leveled my spiritual affection with God up like no other. And a big thing I've been praying to God for is patience and presence. And actually, from your encouragement, just put up an episode recently on my YouTube channel about patience and presence, but talking about this point in regards to like, when you pray to God for patience and presence, he doesn't just wake you up tomorrow morning and make you a patient person. He gives you the opportunity to practice those things you pray for. Absolutely. And the baby has given me the ultimate opportunity to practice presence and patience. And I just keep telling myself, like, I don't get these moments back. These first few weeks, these little tiny peanut moments, you know, and they're like just wrapped up in a little burrito and just so cute and innocent. And it's been, like I mentioned to you before we started recording, just the ultimate brake pump on my life for me to really slow down and maybe take my hands off of some wheels that aren't my hands or aren't my wheels for my hands to be on, and just focus on what God's calling me to do right now. And so it's been beautiful.
Man, I love that. And speaking of grace, compassion, and patience, the conversation around money today for a lot of people doesn't involve any of that. It is like, I need to be rich now. I need to have it all now. Justin, like, forget like the financial advice and your work and journey to financial freedom. I would probably say a majority of people out there, money is a sore subject. Money is very tough for people to talk about. It breaks up relationships. It unites people. It is like the ever growing powerful force, right? And one of the things that I love about your perspective on, I want to open it up here, is that for most people, especially the listeners in the audience who are entrepreneurs, sometimes there tends to be a little bit of an urgency around like, I need to build wealth. And for you and a lot of your perspective, what we were talking about before we recorded, is that we build financial stability so you don't have to worry about that. And sometimes financial stability takes time and it takes patience. Why do you think so many people are so urgent with money when there's playbooks out there that really communicate that wealth is actually a long-term building process? It's rich is fast from what I've read, but wealth is long-term and it's a mindset and it's almost a lifestyle. What's your take on that?
I love that. And my answer, the most authentic answer that comes to me, is that people don't like tension. And so between where you are in your present moment and where you want to be, the in-between is the tension. And so if I'm in a present moment right now and where I want to be is wealthy or rich, whatever term we want to use, right? That in-between is tension until I get there, right? And so people don't like tension. And so they'll do whatever they can to avoid or push through or expedite the process of sitting in tension.
Yeah.
And so, give you an example here. That's kind of why things in life are often black and white when they shouldn't be, because God lives in the gray area, which is going to sound funny coming from a finance guy. The human mind by design is a binary system, which just means it's this or it's that. It's good or it's bad. It's right or it's wrong. And so because of that, we don't like to take the time to think through things. Instead, we just default to one option or the other, because taking the time to think through something is tension. And we don't like tension as human beings. And so we often default to the option that is most societally accepted, right? Because that's the easiest. It's the road of less tension. And so the authentic answer that came to me when you asked that question was, people don't want to sit in the tension that comes with the time that it takes to actually build real wealth. And so they look for shortcuts and look to expedite things. There's no wrong way of trying to, let me back up here. So that they're not wrong for trying to speed it up, right? There are healthy ways to do that. But the most important thing, like we said before, is to build that stability through laying a foundation. And that takes a little bit of time. Finances that work take work.
And social media also has exacerbated so much of this urgency that we need to get wealthy or like rich now. And I've talked about this with other guests on the show. And I think having somebody as well-versed in money as you are really come on here and talk about key wealth building strategies and the mindset work. And I want to share with everybody that we're not going to give you stock picks or tell you to go throw all your life savings in like crypto. And I always want to like be cognizant of that too. This is not really financial advice. Justin and I are here to really set you guys up with a really good foundation, as he was mentioning, about what it really takes to build wealth. And so I do want to open it up, though, more into the patience and the process of money. But before we do that, we got to get into the pitfalls of what comes with money. So there are people that freak out or they get stressed out when a bill comes across their plate. There's an energy towards it. And in that energy, they feel like, oh, I have to pay this bill. And it feels exhausting. Mm-hmm. Another way I've seen is that people go, it's a privilege to pay my bills. Like, I'm so grateful to pay my bills with that. When we talk about mindset for expenses, which a lot of entrepreneurs look at expenses as like, oh my God, it's like the death of me. Mm-hmm. How do you approach that in changing someone's mindset to see that bills in a lot of ways are actually a blessing? It's a blessing in disguise for a lot of people.
Yeah. I'm going to steal some theories and concepts and teachings from Ken Honda with this answer. He is the author of a book called Happy Money. If you don't have that book, please, please go get that book. It's incredible. It's a great audio book. But he talks about money being energy. Right. And the energy behind money is usually assigned by our attitudes towards money. Mm. And money is like a cycle, like a loop, right? It's got to leave to come back and vice versa. Right. And so the energy that we have behind money is assigned to us, as I mentioned, based on our attitude behind money. And so a big part of that is our expenses. And so Ken Honda talks about there's only two types of money. There's happy money and there's sad money. And so how you welcome money is exactly how you spend money or release money. And so if you are paying your bills with a frown on your face or with scarcity thoughts, that is the same energy that you're going to welcome your money back in. But if you're paying your bills from a gratitude standpoint, from a happiness standpoint, from a positivity standpoint, that's exactly how you're going to welcome your money back too as well. And so when I pay my bills, every time I pay my mortgage or pay my bills, I say, God, thank you so much for my ability to be able to pay this. Or when I pay my employees, right? I've got a decent amount of business expenses. I'm not going to lie to you, but I'll get into why and the relationship I have with them. But when I pay those, I'm like, God, thank you so much for me being able to pay these 10 employees. Or thank you so much for me being able to afford this service that is helping me spread my impact on this earth. And then when you get into the entrepreneur side of things or business side of things, the two expenses I tell people that you got to get very familiar with and comfortable with are client acquisition cost and fulfillment cost. And so what are those? First and foremost, they're the key to you working less while making the most you've ever had while having the largest impact you'll ever have. right? And so client acquisition cost, or how much does it cost you to acquire a client? Fulfillment cost, or after you acquire that client, how much does it now cost you to fulfill the services that you sold to them? And so those two expenses are a privilege, right? And they're needed if you want to scale. I hate to use that word. I hate to not use mainstream words that like all these gurus out there.
That word gets so over you. It's so overused.
Just means if you want to grow your impact, right, while also increasing the bottom line when it comes to your energy, while also increasing your income. And so if all of those things, you know, your freedom, your time, your energy, your impact, and your money are important to you, and you want to grow them at a healthy level, those expenses and that attitude in the first part of the answer are key components to making that happen.
The talk about scaling, I mean, God, it's, I also, one of the things that I just really bothers me is that everybody's under the impression they have to scale. Like they have to grow their business. Yeah. It doesn't matter what business it is. They immediately have to like, I have to grow this thing. Mm. And some of the most wealthy people got really good at simplifying, from my understanding, got really good at just simplifying their business model. And over the long haul, just continued little by little, growing a little bit more, not getting over their skis, not getting over leverage, not growing too quickly, just keeping the pedal constantly where I was at and going a little bit faster every single year. Mm-hmm. And then you hit that mark. And something you said that I think was really interesting is that while scaling is kind of more this like overused, like sexy buzzword that everybody wants to, you know, fulfill in their lifetime, I love how you said cost is a privilege, specifically around client acquisition and fulfillment cost. Is that being a privilege? Tell me why that is. Why should we look at those two costs specifically as privilege, as an honor to be able to have that as part of our business models?
Yeah. So client acquisition costs are what help you attract ideal clients, or what helps you attract ideal clients. And so, and in a calculated way too, as well. And I think that it's becomes a privilege when you start to see the money that you're putting into those costs bringing you ideal clients who you love to work with and are just good for everybody involved. Mm-hmm. And so that's basically client acquisition cost is the money that you're spending to attract your favorite clients. It's a privilege, right? Instead of just sitting back like, huh, I hope it comes to me, right? It's strategic in a healthy way to attract ideal clients. And a lot of times it doesn't have to be your energy that's going into those endeavors, right? When you have or able to pay for things, it doesn't, you're basically, let me back up, get excited here because I got some notes in front of me. I want to make sure I deliver to have the
impact. Go for it, man. We're all about the hot takes and the perspectives here, so fire away.
I love that. So when it comes to acquiring clients, you're going to use one and or all three of these resources, either your time, your money, or your energy, right? And so when you start to use your money to acquire clients, a lot of times it takes a lot less of your energy and your time. And you're spending less energy and time getting better and more quantities of ideal clients, right? With still maintaining beautiful financial profit margins. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how I see the client acquisition cost as being a privilege. And fulfillment cost, right? That means that somebody paid you to enter your program, your business, your services. So if you have fulfillment costs, that means you have clients, right? And if you have clients, you've got a business that is working to a certain degree. And so when I see our fulfillment costs come out, I'm just like, thank you, God, for these, because that all that means is we've got a filled program. All that means is we've got hundreds and hundreds of happy clients around the country. And so I could go on down seven different rabbit holes with that answer, but like I'll keep it there. And I hope that paints the picture of how those can be a privilege.
Yeah. And in the same mindset, I want to talk about with taxes, because some people look at taxes and they're like so anti-tax. And I got to say, like, taxes is a very touchy subject. People like, you know, you see all these influencers on Instagram talking about like, this is how I like didn't pay the government anything on 10 million, which is like, I don't know if you really want to be posting that online and telling everybody how you did that. But one of the things that I picked up recently, just reading a lot of money mindset and abundance books, because it's kind of been like my obsession over the last like 6 months. I'm just really fascinated by it. More so the fact is like the true reflection of what happens when you acquire wealth or you grow your wealth, how you change and evolve as a person. It does change you. It really does. Some people would argue maybe it just exposes more of who you are. I actually think if you're stewarding money the proper way, and we can get into kind of like the stewardship around money in general, but I feel like money actually, when you see it as a stewardship, you kind of see this like self-evolution happening for you. Mm. Around taxes though, I read something recently in this book that I've been diving into, A Happy Pocket Full of Money, which is—
Great book.
Yeah, it's one of my go-to books. But what I love about this book is it's so good on the mindset front, but somebody said paying taxes is a privilege. That means you've made a lot of money, or that you've made money if you're paying taxes. And I love how you were talking about privilege, where it's like you have your costs for your clients, and then you also have like your fulfillment costs. Like, man, thank you, God, I can put these 10 people to work, that they have jobs with me. The same thing for taxes, though. Let's talk about that and open that more. Like, what's the privilege aspect of that? What's your take on that? How do I see that as a gratitude practice in paying my taxes, or that, you know, whatever the size of the bill is?
Yeah. I think from a simplistic standpoint, if you're paying taxes, that means you generated revenue or generated money. And if you're an entrepreneur or a business owner, if you're generating money, that means you're working for yourself. And in some essence, you're controlling your time and your schedule and your energy. And so very simple, I think, overlook. But one thing that came to mind is, yes, you will pay a lot in taxes if you make a lot of money as a business owner. And also true too as well, there are some really good strategies that can get your tax liabilities down that are perfectly legal, and things you definitely want to take advantage of. Though we want to be thankful to pay taxes, doesn't mean you should pay more than you have to. Learning the tax game is a high suggestion of mine, but I'll stay away from the strategy side of things, and more so just give you an experience of mine. And so my wife and I have been blessed for the past couple of years where our household, particularly our one business, JFF, Journey to Financial Freedom, has been doing seven figures. And in 2022 was our first seven-figure year. And it also came with a tax bill that represented that. And we got close, in full transparency, we got close to a six-figure tax bill for 2022.
Wow.
Tax year. And it put a pit in my throat for a second. But after I grounded myself, the first words out of my mouth were, God, trust me with this big of a tax bill. And right there shifted my mindset around it and made me more grateful for it.
Wow. Dude, I love that. That is, yeah, that's really powerful. I never even thought about it that way. Mm. Really, when you think about it, I never really thought about it like, wow, I've been given this for a reason. Mm-hmm. And speaking of financial freedom and perspective, what do people get wrong about financial freedom? What are some of the common misconceptions that you see when people approach you in Journey to Financial Freedom in your work? Mm-hmm. What do they tell you about what financial freedom is, and what do they get wrong about that?
They get wrong that they think financial freedom is going to solve all of their problems. And there's a gray area when it comes to the quote that money doesn't solve all your problems. And you're right, it doesn't solve all of them, but it solves a decent amount. And it massively decreases your stress and anxiety. It opens up a lot of opportunities for you, especially if you're doing the work behind the scenes to become the human that is able to not only level up their income, but sustain it and then level it up again from there, if that's a part of the mission and plan that you have for your life and God too as well. But I think the biggest thing that people screw up is that they think that money is going to give them eternal happiness, right? And when my life shifted is when I realized that money doesn't give you eternal happiness, right? Money or other materialistic things, they are what I like to call amplifiers of happiness, not source of happiness, right? And so I'll give you an example. I love the car that I drive. It's a beautiful car. I've always wanted one like that. And when I'm in it, you know, that 15-minute drive to the gym, you know, I'm happy. And when I hop out, it kind of lingers for a couple of minutes. But after that, it's just back to the same old bullshit that's going on up in between my ears, right? Because it's just an amplifier of happiness, which just means short term, quick little spurts, right? Source of happiness is eternal happiness, and that only comes from God. And I think on a deep spiritual level, the biggest mistake that people make is they use God as a means to money instead of money as a means to God.
That's good. I love that, man. And something that came up for me too is, and recently I've learned, I want to echo this, is the fact that people look at individuals or businesses as the sole reason the money is being given to you. Whereas the philosophy behind an abundant mindset or a money mindset is that those are distribution channels in which you receive money. When you're operating in true abundance through God, money can come from anywhere. And it really shouldn't matter if it comes from the business or it comes from your mom or your dad or it comes from Uncle Charlie or whoever it is, or you find money in a bush somewhere outside of a bank, which I heard a crazy story about that. And I'll have to tell you some other time. But like, it really doesn't matter in that aspect where the money comes from. With financial freedom also, I've seen a lot of people, and I've also experienced this, where I don't really know what my number is. Like, people have this idea that like financial freedom's a number and I have to have that number, and then I'm not free until I get that number. Is having a number really that important to be able to cultivate financial freedom?
Yes, actually, if you want financial freedom, okay, to provide you your dream life, right? And so I'll give you an example here, right? How to figure out your number, actually, like a very easy way to figure out your number. It's very important part. It's not the everything that you need for financial freedom. It's not the most important thing, but it's fairly important. Because the big part of financial freedom is you want to be able to live your dream life. You want to make sure you have enough money or enough assets that are spinning you enough money to provide that dream life for you, or it's really not financial freedom. Mm-hmm. And so, what I tell people is that, what you want to do is go through your budget. Right. And add up what your monthly expenses are. So let's just say for easy numbers, that's $5,000. Right. Most people's right now scenario doesn't have everything in there expense wise that they would if they were living their dream life. So then I tell people to dream a little bit. Like, what would you add in there? Right. If you had your dream life, and people are like, oh, my mortgage would probably go up 3K because I'm going to get that beach house. I'd probably start driving that Beamer instead. So my car payment is going to go up 700. I probably want to travel every month. And as we go through that progress, let's just say we find another $15,000 that's needed, right? To be able to add on those things to get you to your dream life. So the 5,000 currently plus the 15,000, we are at $20,000 now a month. And so that's the number that you need to make each month to become financially free. But if you're putting in your time and energy, or you have to put your time and energy in to make that money, you're not financially free. Financial freedom, our definition of it is you own an asset or assets that make you enough money each month to cover your expenses and your lifestyle automatically, whether you choose to show up and work or not. Right? And all assets are just something that is money, is making you money, or can make you money. And so for the entrepreneurs on here, your business is your asset, or what we would call your financial freedom vehicle, or possibility for your financial freedom vehicle. And you can set that up in a way that one day it can spin without you. One day you don't even have to show up, and it'll give you that $20,000 automatically each month. That's the asset or the vehicle that then provides the financial freedom.
That's good. What about investments? Because in that dream number, you just mentioned expenses. Do I, as an individual, need to incorporate the investment as part of an expenses, a part of that budget? So like maybe for some people investing in stocks, because I haven't seen a return on that money that's coming in, and let's say it's $20,000, does that count as an actual expense in my dream budget to say like, oh, I'm going to put $1,000 in a like brokerage fund and go pick some stocks or like whatever the case may be? Does that count as part of my dream life budget?
I say yes, because it's money going out that needs to come from somewhere.
Okay. So it's all money going out. Got it. Okay.
Yep. Yep. And so in my wife and I's number, yep, we do have our monthly stock market investments in that number.
Got it. Okay. With financial freedom also, I think most people get really hung up on the system and like the process of it. And I think, again, it goes back to the mindset piece of this to me. It's like, you know, when people save money or they run credit card bills, or they have things that are kind of just going through the roof, or growing as they're growing their business, people kind of negate the investment vehicle piece. And I want to talk about the mindset approach that you guys take when it comes to actually investing as part of your expenses. Is there a sacrificial component to this that you see when people come in like, oh, I can't go out and buy the handbag. I have to put it in my Roth IRA, and they feel a little bit of constriction and constraint. How do you guys move them from sacrifice more into prioritization, so to speak, or more about the abundance aspect of when it comes to their financial freedom vehicle being their business?
Yeah. Well, first thing, I think if you're running the right systems, you can live your life and spend your money in parallel with making financial progress. And honestly, I suggest figuring out a system that works for you where, like, you're still able to live your life, but you're making financial progress at the same time. You're still able to spend your money, but in a calculated, controlled, and confident fashion. And so that would be like my first suggestion when it comes to that question. But I think also investments-wise, you need to invest in the stock market with two understandings. One, it's for the long haul, right? And two, it's based on your unique variables. So like whatever your goals are is going to dictate your investment strategy into the stock market. And then third, the biggest thing that I teach people is it may not make a ton of sense right now for you to be investing in the stock market when we could utilize that money to invest into your business. And so the best way to become a millionaire is to become an equity millionaire first, right? That means that I am investing my money into a business that eventually now is worth seven figures. I don't have seven figures cash on me, but on my balance sheet, I own a business that is worth seven figures. So I'm an equity millionaire. An equity millionaire just means that like you have ownership in things that make your net worth over seven figures. And so if I own a $1 million business, right? I don't have $1 million in cash, but I have $1 million in equity, which makes me an equity millionaire. And if you have a seven-figure business, eventually that means that it's going to start cash flowing you large chunks, even after expenses, even after taxes. And so with that, then you can save your way to becoming a cash millionaire or invest your way in the stock market to becoming a cash millionaire. And before you do that, what's happening right now is most people, I'm just going to make up an easy number, you're probably after expenses and taxes, you got $1,000 left over each month. Do the math and figure out how long that would take you to save $1 million. Probably a lot longer than you'd want, right? Instead though, let's keep reinvesting that money back into the business, right? To help it increase its revenue while maintaining a beautiful profit margin. And then now you have $20,000 left over each month instead of $2,000. Right. And so now you're an equity millionaire with much larger profit margins or money left over at the end of each month to now save your way to a liquid millionaire much faster. And all liquid millionaire is just like you got $1 million in cash now. And so that honestly, we educate people on the stock market. We try to get them to do something that makes sense for them if it makes sense for them. But a lot of times it makes more sense for them to invest that extra money into the business. Right, to go the route that we just talked about, or they have an established business like ours. Every dollar I put into my business, Mike, I get back $3 to $5. Why in the world would I put that in the stock market? I'm not getting
that. Exactly. The math just adds up for you to continue investing in yourself on that.
Right. And so you're just building these assets, then can feed the assets. And I know I'm getting a little deep on the strategy side of things, but then a lot of the assets that we have in the stock market, my wife and I are able to borrow against. Right. It's our money. Nobody can tell us that, like, they're not running my credit. They're not reporting it to the credit bureau. They're not telling me that I can't borrow it. Right. You borrow money from yourself, doesn't show up on your credit report, and you pay yourself back with interest. So if I pay 5% on this, it's all going back into my account. Right. And there's no repayment schedule. It's not like you owe $1,000 the next 30 years on the 15th. It's my money and I can repay it the way I want. So I built the business that then fed the stock market assets that now I'm able to borrow against and go buy more assets with, like rental properties, or put the money back in the business, start a new business, or go out and buy programs that increase my value and my knowledge, and then ultimately increase my wealth from there. And so it's about figuring out where your extra money or extra dollars is better spent right now, what asset you want to put that money into. That's the biggest bang for your buck. That's what we do with our clients to figure out.
I want to talk more about that too, because if people are looking for a way, as we're approaching kind of the last segment of the episode, when people are looking, maybe, or I should maybe take a step back. What can people expect coming to you and saying, Justin, make me a millionaire, right? Make me rich. Like what? Yeah. Talk to us about your process. Talk to us about what you focus on mostly. And then really, what have the results been for people in your program? And what have they see come to fruition based upon the principles and the tactics that you guys teach?
I love that. And what you can expect is that we're going to do it the right way when it comes to making you wealthy, right? And getting you to financial freedom. And I tell people all the time, I don't want you to be wealthy for a year, 5 years, 10 years, or even 30. I want you to be wealthy for generations to come. And business owners that build generational wealth do it on a strong foundation. And a lot of times that foundation is built heavily on financial literacy and stability. And so when people first come to us, right, we help them implement the right systems and strategies with money, right? The masculine side of things. But then the most important part, maybe the feminine or mindset or internal world side of things, we also help them grow a better relationship with money. Once those two things are in place, then we shift our focus to their income. And the majority of our clients are business owners and their income comes from their business. Now that we got the finances under control, it's now time to optimize the business and get that under control. And so now, because now it makes more sense to make more money. When people come to us at first, they're like, I want to make 100K a month. It's like, you can't handle 10K a month right now. What makes you think you can handle 100K? It doesn't make any sense to talk about that right now. So we lay the right foundations by implementing the right systems and strategies, helping you grow a better relationship with money. And then when those things are in place, we shift our focus to that income and now start growing your income at healthy levels. And people that follow that when they come to us, right? They truthfully do reach financial freedom in a couple of years. Financial freedom doesn't have to be for 65-year-olds anymore. It doesn't have to take 30 years. I know we're saying don't rush it here, but there is a way to do it in a couple of years. There really is. And so a lot of our clients that they'll go through that process, lay the right foundations, right? Then start scaling their income and business and lifestyle on top of that the right way, and ultimately get to a point where they're operating their dream business, right? They've got the right operations in place, and it's spending them enough money each month automatically to cover their expenses and their lifestyle. And they're showing up in that business how they want to show up, right? Not doing things that they don't want to do. They've got, most importantly though, the time and the energy and space to do what they want outside of work, which a lot of times has a lot to do with bettering themselves and being present with their family and their loved ones. And that's really the goal. Money's not the goal. It's just the tool to the outcome that we want. And everybody's honestly definition of a dream life and financial freedom is a little bit different, but that's the process that we take and it works extremely well.
Before we end the episode today, Ben and I asked my last question. You know, you and I have talked a little bit beforehand in a previous conversation about the importance of God being in your life and stewarding your finances and how massive that's been for you. Mm-hmm. I think for some people out there, they may see that money is evil, or they have like, it's not, it's, you know, money is evil and it's greedy if you want money. And, you know, there's parts of, not to get religious, but there's parts of the Bible where, you know, they even talk more about financial freedom than they do talk about salvation.
Yep.
So, you know, there's two sides of the coin, obviously, with this argument, but for the sake of the conversation and just this aspect, you are definitely a man of faith and you've talked a lot about how God has blessed you and continues to bless you through abundance. But that took work for you to really see and understand abundance coming from your faith. And I would love for you to kind of just open up about where you were previously before that relationship with God came to fruition and how it's worked wonders for you now through the lens of your finances.
Mm. Wow. That's a great question. And so what comes to mind is that my deeper relationship with God is showing me that the first half of life is all about creating a name for ourselves based off accolades, accomplishments, and achievements. And the second half of our life, if we're willing to die to that false self from the first half of life, is all about living for God. Mm. And so I have realized that like I can live for God at greater levels when my financial stability is there, right? And I have increased resources, time, money, and energy to be able to live for God and the purpose that He has put on my life. I think another thing too, as well, is I started to really understand what He wants for us abundance-wise, what He wants for us wealth-wise. Like you mentioned, it's a very talked about topic in the Bible. Yeah. In the Gospels, it's the second most talked about topic by Jesus Christ. He talks about money more than He talks about grace. Isn't that crazy?
It was so fascinating when I first heard that, because I would have never known. And I went to a Catholic school when I was a kid, and that was like never talked about. So when I heard that a couple of years ago through a friend of mine, I was just blown away by it. I was like, there's absolutely no way. Because I was like, well, if that's the case, why are people so poor? Anyway, I don't want to get, for another episode. Yeah.
It makes sense. And I think the Bible verse of, or that people really misconstrue is, they say money is the root of all evil. Unfortunately, people leave out the most important part of that verse, and it's the front part of it, which says the love of money is the root of all evil. Mm. And in biblical translations, what that's saying, if you love something, it means you idolize something. You can only idolize one thing at one time. And if you're idolizing or loving money, you're not idolizing God. And so money ends up being your God. And so that Bible verse is so massively misconstrued, which then people default to that when it comes to an easier decision in life, which is just, oh, this money topic's really confusing. It's scary. My parents were terrible with it. I don't really want to spend the time figuring it out. Tension, right? That we talked about in the beginning of the episode.
You're right.
So what do they do? They just default, money's stupid. Money's evil. I don't need it. Money's bad.
Yeah, and they completely reject it. Yeah.
And completely reject it. And so, lastly, with my relationship with God, for some reason, God decided to bless me at a very young age with all the earthly things that I wanted. My dream house, my dream car, $1 million business, making X amount a month, all these things that I thought was going to make me happy. And I accomplished them, and they're great. There's nothing wrong with these things, but I was just as anxious and depressed as I was before. Mm. And I was like, what's going on here? And it's God put me in this paradoxical corner that forced me to look within. And to ultimately realize that these things on earth that I fear for and I long for, He has created and He's in control of. And when you can start understanding that, you can surrender those situations over to God, like finances. And so I surrender my finances over to God, but I'm also still in charge of the actions I need to take around them. And so understanding that balance of what is the healthy balance or the healthy dance between surrender and self-reliance when it comes to your finances will ultimately start to unlock some incredible doors for y'all, because you can have the best systems and strategies in place. And we're big on systems and strategies, but they only go as far or work as well as the human being behind them who's operating them based off the beliefs that they have around money and the likelihood of them achieving the wealth that they want to achieve.
Man, that is so good. And when you started talking about being blessed with earthly possessions and the anxiety that came up, it literally reminded me of a time in my business where I had like my highest grossing month and like immediately felt like I had hit the big time, but for like a couple hours.
Empty.
Yep. And I still felt empty. I still felt like this isn't enough. Like this really isn't the thing that makes me feel whole. It was cool to accomplish it, but at the same time, it was like nothing changed in my life. It was just receiving the money, but I didn't feel like it super expansive. I felt like good for like 3 minutes, but it felt like a hit. It was just an adrenaline hit.
Exactly.
And that's for me when I experienced that for the first time, I started recognizing how important playing the game is. Like it was for me, it was like I got more joy in playing the entrepreneurial game of like being in business and being a business owner and enjoying my time and recognizing that like money is truly a tool to attach my identity to the fact that my identity or self-worth goes up with more money or it goes down with less money. That to me, when I experienced that, really shifted a massive perspective. So thank you so much for sharing that, man. I think that was like really well said and absolutely beautiful.
Absolutely.
Last question for you. Yeah, no, of course, man. And last question for you. As you know, we ask every single guest on the show what their personal definition is of living their truth. So, Justin, what does it mean to you to live your truth?
Living my truth, I think, is just living the life that I desire, that I feel is fully aligned with the life that God wants for me. And so I know when things are from God and when they're not from this physical feeling. And so I get this physical feeling that I am walking in his presence. I'm peaceful. I'm present and I'm doing the things that I desire. And so being able to have the space, the time, the money, and the energy to ultimately walk in those steps in the path that you believe God has put for you on this earth, right? The life that he wants you to live. I think that's ultimately to me what it's like to live your truth, being the most authentic version of yourself you possibly can. And that's our salvation journey here on earth. It's a beautiful dance at best of four steps forward and two steps backwards. And so that right there to me is living my truth.
Man, that's so good. Justin, thank you, man, for your time and your energy and just for joining us on the show this week. Man, it was a beautiful conversation. We will definitely put links to Journey to Financial Freedom. We'll make sure people get in touch with you and just share it with our audience. As always, man, thank you so much for everything and just for you coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Of course, brother.
Yeah. And thanks to all of you for tuning into this week's episode of Live Your Truth Now. If you like what you heard, go ahead and give us a follow on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also watch other episodes of Live Your Truth Now podcast on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Mike Liguori. We'll see you guys next week. Take care.